Welcome to My Stories of Chinese Characters podcast series. I'm Uncle Hans.
And this is Adam. This is my stories of being humiliated by a 72-year-old man. Hello, Uncle Hansa.
Well, hey, do you remember the characters for Ice and Snow?
I do suffer from short-term memory loss. Can you refresh my memory, please, real quick? Give me a clue.
Okay, the character Bing for Ice. It consists of some two dots on the side, which in the ancient character is supposed to look like ice, and a water on the right-hand side, because ice, as you know, comes from water. And we discussed on the video the story for Snow. On the top part, you see rain, which is related to snow. In the ancient character, it had feathers coming down, but in the modern character, you see a hand, and it's kind of understood that a hand can, like, brush away the snow. Anyway, that's the character for Ice and Snow, of which in Changchun, we have plenty of.
Right, yes, it was bountiful. And I love how both the traditional, like, first version and of the pictograph, and then like the final version, both kind of have logic to it. So brushing away snow versus just like enjoying the flurries. I like they equate the falling snow to like feathers, kind of, you know, a Forrest Gump type of thing where it's just like the feather just slowly floating down to the ground. But yes, that's true. The city we were at, Changchun, what do you think is the most interesting aspect of this city?
Changchun means the long spring. And I'm not sure exactly where it got its name. When we were there, it wasn't spring.
Yeah. That's the last thing I thought about when I was there. It was freezing. I was ill at the time. I had lost my voice, if you remember.
The slopes. Do you know what's required for snow skiing?
Snow,
that's right. Now, this is the thing. I know how to snow ski, but I don't know how to
and,
ski.
And I was in survival mode. It was literally like I felt like a phone that was like in low battery mode because I needed to be charged. It was ghastly cold.
It was very cold. And I told my friends when I knew I was going up there, I said, I'm going to Manchuria. And in Chinese, they call it Dongbei, which Americans don't understand, but everybody's heard of Manchuria. And Manchuria is named after the people who lived there called the Manchus. And so I like to sometimes use a more exotic name. So I told them I was going to Manchuria. But it's definitely very cold there. And there's a character, Winter, Dong. And I study ancient Chinese characters, and frequently I don't agree with the experts. Most of the time I agree with the experts because most of the time it's either true or false. But in the character for Dong, which means winter,
east. I thought it was man. I'm sorry, I thought east. Isn't Dong East?
It's pronounced the same, maybe a different tone. But the character for Winter, in my opinion, comes from the shadow on the sundial. And when it goes the furthest north, it looks like the shape of the ancient character. So that would have told you that it was the winter solstice, and you would know that it was the end of winter and the beginning of something better.
Wow, okay. But this city also has other attributes other than its cold, freezing weather. I mean, I know that there's automobile manufacturers were like occurring there in the 1950s, and they're known for to produce films way back, one of the first films. I think that's there is a history there that even transcends just its geography and climate. But we were there. We were in this. We were there in that in this area where they had this like ice park. There was like a. It was like a winter, like city that we were living in. It was very very magical, and could be romantic if I wasn't with a, you know, an older man. but anyway.
Yes. Well, in recent years in the Northeast, some things have come up. These ice sculptures, and they make huge ice sculptures, and some of them are very elaborate, some of them are very large. And this has become a thing in the past 10 or 20 years. Another thing that we stayed in a place that had hot water heating under the floor, which is very amazing if you've never had it before. The whole room can be the same temperature, which is very difficult to do with any other kind of heating.
I have actually experienced that. I had the luxury of like renting a hutong apartment that had that. And it was, it was great. You're like, it would be free. Actually, it would be freezing because hutong apartments are old and this was refurbished, but there was still, you know, wind would be coming through the windows that were closed and underneath the front door. But like your feet were toasty warm and the room would be still quite cold. That's an interesting innovation that I had never experienced before.
Yeah, in China, we have an invisible line between so-called North China and South China. And really, North China, it gets so cold that you have to have heat in the wintertime, otherwise you'll freeze to death. But the first time I was involved with Chinese engineering, I was working for the American Army Corps of Engineers. And that was the 1970s, and most people in China didn't have any electricity, and they used they burned coal or charcoal. Times have changed greatly since then, but there's still this line where north of the line everybody has heating in the winter, and south of the line all the buildings are very, you know, there's no insulation and it's quite cold in the winter. That line is slowly moving south as we get more and more energy.
Yeah, you're right. I know it's like, in Beijing, I can, all the radiators turn on at a certain date and we're, you know, we're good to go. If I go visit my family.
Oh, yes, one of the problems China has is we have, well, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. We have central steam heating, neighborhood centralized steam heating. But unfortunately, it's not turned on until a certain date. And so it may be quite cold up to that date, and then they turn the heat on and everybody's warm.
Or if you have an early, you know, early heat wave, you got the heat going and you got to try to, you know, shut it off. And you don't like, that's my main problem. I like it more, a little bit more cold than hot. Like I went to visit my family down south in Jiangxi province, and it can get really cold because it's really humid down there. It's really wet. So when it gets cold, it's awful. And, you know, everyone's wearing coats inside. And if you want to heat something, you have to, you know, get your own unit and install it. And it's kind of like I understand the logic behind that, but it seems like it creates an inequity.
Well, the problem is actually we burned coal and everyone was breathing noxious fumes all winter long. But things are getting much better, but they don't get better everywhere all the time. I was teaching at Tsinghua University and I got there on an especially cold, I think it was November or something, and they hadn't turned the heat on, and they weren't going to turn the heat on until a particular date. But all the students were freezing. It was like sub-zero in the student housing and in the teacher housing. And so finally they turned the heat on early. That's one of the problems. One of the things that still exists to some extent. It's vastly better than it was, but there is this kind of magic line south of it. The people are cold.
Well, I didn't know. You said something interesting. I didn't know that the line was moving. That's a. But I knew about the line, and I know that it exists. So that's interesting. So it's a. As China becomes more and more energy efficient, I could say, or. Acquired
they have more energy.
Right. Energy resources available to them. This line can keep moving down and down so that everyone has the same opportunity towards, you know, central air in their home. Speaking of being cold, you know, while trying to teach, I couldn't imagine, you know, trying to just live your day-to-day life in Changchun with it being negative 13 degrees if you just want to go to the convenience store. And if I was going to go to the convenience store freezing like I was when I went and visited there, what would be the dialect? How would that differ, let's say, from how I would speak to like a Laoban or some kind of convenience store employee in Beijing or Nanjing? How would that differ? Is there like a dialect?
China language is different from what most people think it is. In China, we now, everybody in China almost speaks Putonghua. It's basically derived from a northern dialect similar to Beijing. But that's the language of education. We also have what's called Fangyan, which is the local dialects. Some dialects are very strong and very powerful, and many people speak them, and maybe even they haven't learned Putonghua yet. Cantonese, the dialects has a huge culture, independent culture of itself. And also the Mingnan dialects, the Ming dialects in Fujian province and Taiwan province, they have a culture all of their own. Some of them, you have the Wu dialects, Shanghai. That's not, in my opinion, doesn't have much of a culture of its own, not much of an independent culture. Then you have the Gan, which is also doesn't have much independent culture, in my opinion. Then you have a special type of people called the Kujia, or it translates into English as the visitors. Or Hakka. Maybe Americans have heard of it as Hakka. And these people moved down from the north, and they're very similar to Jews. They moved away from their original homeland, and then when they moved to the south, and so they became business people. And their women are also noted for being taking control of the family. They have a history and a culture somewhat similar to Jews, and for the past 2,000 years, although they've lived mainly in the South and have their own dialects, they haven't completely integrated with the local culture. So I have a few other things to say about local dialects. We have Putonghua is the language of education, and the local dialects is the language that you speak to your mother. And generally you don't speak to your mother about high level education things. So you kind of have a very strange thing about language. Here in Nanjing, we have Nanjing dialect, and I can speak to everybody. And even if they on the road, if they speak Nanjing dialect to me, I can usually kind of understand them if I'm face to face, because I know what they're talking about. But if they're talking to their mother, I don't have a clue what they're talking about. So language is a strange thing.
Yeah, I have that same experience. I can't really tell the difference. What I can observe is that when my wife's mother, my mother-in-law, when she's in Beijing and she's talking to someone, it's like they don't know what they're saying. They don't know what my mother-in-law is saying.
Language is a very strange thing, and in China, we have dialects, which in many cases are actually different languages. if you're from Beijing and you've never heard Mingnan dialect, you will not be able to understand anything. But everybody has heard Putonghua on the radio, so almost everybody understands Putonghua, the main dialect. But also there's a very strange thing. I was in northern Burma and in a small town, and they heard that I was there and I spoke Chinese. So somebody came up to me and they started talking to me, and I didn't understand what they were saying. My Burmese friend says, he's speaking Chinese to you. But I couldn't understand him. But then I realized he was speaking with a Yunnan dialect. He was speaking a local language. But after a couple of minutes, my brain adjusted and I could understand pretty much what he was saying. And that's kind of the way it is. And sometimes I was having a conversation in Cantonese, and it was difficult. That was in my early days. But people go from kind of something half and half. And I remember in the 1970s, there was this interesting program in Taiwan where there was a dialogue between people and they spoke half Mandarin and half Mingnanhua. It's about every sentence would have some Mandarin words and some Mingnan words. And it was interesting because you could if you understood one language, you can understand the whole thing. So language is a very strange thing, what you understand and what you don't understand.
Yeah. I get that. It's a, you know, context helps in understanding what someone has to say, right? So if you get a, you know, you get a couple words in a language you understand, and then the dialect is like, you know, it's like fill in the blank. Okay. You're talking about this in this situation. I know what that word means, right?
Yeah. Context is, it's like when we were in Chengdu and we were at the Doubanjiang factory, that guy was speaking Chengdu Hua. And I didn't I didn't really understand what he was saying. But
you're talking about the bean paste place, the place
the bean paste place. But I could talk to him. Because number one, he understood what I was saying. I didn't really understand what he was saying, but it turned out okay because the context was such that I knew everything we were supposed to do.
So in Changchun, you were able to pretty much understand like everyone?
Oh, yes, because they were all speaking Putonghua. It's like there, as you travel around China, As we went to Chengdu, there were many people who insisted on speaking Chengdu Hua or Sichuan Hua, which made it rather difficult to understand. But in a place like Shanghai, nobody ever speaks Shanghaiese to me in Shanghai. And in Nanjing, it's rare. Sometimes people will speak Nankinese to me. But most of the time they don't. And sometimes they speak something that's in between Nankinese and Putonghua, in which case.
But I was going to say, so, but in Changchun, especially when we were at the ski resort, which is kind of like a destination location where a lot of visitors come, there probably was all sorts of dialects going on at one time. Were you able to differentiate between
in Changchun? I never heard anybody I couldn't understand. Basically everybody there was speaking, although they have their local dialect, you never hear it, hardly ever.
Okay, what about this? The characters are still the same regardless of the dialect, right?
Not exactly.
Give me an example.
Not exactly.
Here.
If there's a language like, say, Shantanese, when they speak, almost all of the words are related to Putonghua. And so you could pretty much write down regular Chinese and they would read it and it would be the same. But with Mingnan dialect and with Guangdong dialect, they have maybe 20% of the words are not related to Putonghua. And so how do they manage this? Well, in Cantonese, they have several hundred extra characters for special Cantonese words. And also in Cantonese, there are many things that are written in Cantonese. So you can still read newspapers in Cantonese. In Mingnan dialect, I don't think there's hardly anything that's written in Mingnan dialect. But when they do, they do something different. They take Mandarin characters and that are pronounced like Mingnan. And so if you're reading a Mingnan novel or story, you can recognize all the characters, but you don't know what they're saying. So it's not totally true that everybody reads Putonghua. It's not exact. It's not technically true.
Okay, very interesting. That would be like going, I'm just trying to like associate to my upbringing. Like if I went to, Birmingham, Alabama, and suddenly all the vowels were shaped differently, just a little bit, it's just
Okay.
a
In America, we have different dialects, but you can always understand 99% of what, if you're from New York, you'll understand 99% of what they say in Alabama. Not true in
Really?
China. But another interesting thing is
Because of
the
like the 50
Japanese.
plus ethnicities, right? It's because of the it's amazing. I think of China, or actually I should say that someone who's never been to China would think of China as being very isolationist and very like homogenous, but it's home to 50 plus ethnicities, right? And that's probably the core of it,
Now,
wouldn't you
the ethnicities you talk about, like the Yi people we talked about, those
agree?
languages are not even related to Chinese. They
Right.
are like
Okay.
different languages. When they talk about ethnicities, they're usually talking about languages that are totally different from Chinese. Like Manchu is not even related to Chinese. But
Wow.
there's
Okay.
another very interesting thing that happened. The Japanese borrowed the Chinese writing system during the Tang Dynasty. And if you look at Tang Dynasty Japanese, it's not Japanese, it's Chinese. And in the Tang Dynasty, in order for a Japanese to be able to write, he had to write in Chinese, basically. And then slowly, the Japanese Chinese evolved into modern Japanese. So now you have the words from Chinese are still written like Chinese, but the Japanese words are written in either hiragana or katakana. So it's a
So you're
kind
saying
of a
that's like an
strange thing.
extreme example of how even on a written level, how dialects can take on different pictographs, different characters, and but it's a obviously a more extreme version because Japan's a there's a huge barrier called a sea, a body of water, and so the language gets to kind of it's kind of like the bottleneck effect in evolution. Like the evolution of the language gets to go on its own route and takes on its own form. But theoretically, you could say that Japanese language derived from Chinese characters is what you're saying.
No, Japanese isn't even related to Chinese. Japanese is more closely related to Turkish.
Oh, but okay.
And so, but it's like you can borrow Chinese and you can pronounce it in English. Like the character Chen for dog, I could call it dog. I can pronounce it dog. But Japanese is a very different language from, it's like a totally different language from Chinese.
So I
But
get that, but you're saying the characters though, right? Is that what you're
Well, the Chin
saying?
the so-called Chinese dialects, the so-called Fangyan, they are all very closely related to Chinese. If you are from Beijing and you've never heard Mingnan, you won't understand anything.
Right.
But if the Mingnan person says a sentence and then you translate it word per word, then it will be quickly clear. It's like it will be fairly clear what they said. It's like ni hao goes to lei ho. It's the same thing, except it's pronounced very differently. And so if you study it, if you're from Beijing, you can probably learn Mingnanhua in 3 months. It's because they're closely related, although the accent is extremely different. Whereas if you try to learn Russian, if you're from Beijing and you try to learn Russian, it's a totally different language.
Right. Yeah, everything's different.
Yeah.
The coldness is the same. Being it's as
Yeah.
what I would imagine what Siberia was like, which I've never been to, but which you have. Would you say it's comparable?
Yeah, it depends on when you're there. I went to Siberia in the winter. And it was 40 degrees below zero. Yes, it's comparable. You better dress warmly.
So, okay, what is the character for like opposite of that though? Like if we were like in Hainan, how would you describe that?
That character, the character "Re" means hot. It comes from the character for art on top, which is pronounced E, but the dialect change goes to "Re", and on the bottom you have a fire. So anyway,
Okay,
all the
interesting.
characters can be traced back to eventually becoming logical.
So I've went to Hainan, I think it was like early May, and I remember there was a moment where I was just sweating so much. My shirt was totally drenched, and I was sweating, it was dripping from my shirt to my shorts, like into my crotch. So it looked like I peed myself. It wasn't pee, I promise. That's how hot I was. It was just dripping sweat, waiting for a bus. So, okay, not my favorite season. I don't want to be in that, unless I'm literally in the ocean 24/7. I do not. The Hainan experience was not my favorite. What's your favorite season? So I'm more of a fall guy. I like. Like when leaves change and all that.
Okay.
What's your favorite thing?
First of all, let me point out Hainan, the place that Adam is talking about, is a huge island province in the Gulf of Tonkin off the coast of Vietnam. And in the summer, it gets really humid and really hot, which almost no Americans are used to. It's like the
Thank you.
first time in Taiwan, we have that's called tropical. In Taiwan, the first time it was summer, I got off the airplane. It was like, oh, geez. It's like 90 degrees, but 100% humidity. And so my clothes were completely soaking wet all the time because I was sweating so much. But that's how it is if you want to live in some place like India or Hainan or Taiwan in the summertime.
But
So.
I've been to Las Vegas too. Las Vegas is like incredibly hot. No trees, there's no cover. But it's completely dry. So
Yes.
you don't notice that you're like dying of heat stroke.
In Las Vegas, it's very hot in the summertime, but it's dry heat, and so you're not going to sweat. You're not your clothes are never going to be soaking wet in Las Vegas.
I was always tired of like, ugh. I
Oh
felt like it
yeah.
was, it's that, I was like, where did my energy go? But yeah, I wouldn't sweat, but I would just like feel the result of what it would be like to run a mini marathon at all times. Anyway, so what's the season? What is Uncle Hansa? Where does he, if you could live perpetually in one season, which one would it be?
A
Spring,
dry
summer?
summer season. And
You like the warm.
we were in Manchuria in the wintertime, but not far away, there's the Gobi Desert, about the same latitude. When you talk about Gobi Shamo, that means the Gobi Desert. Sha means sand. And in order to draw a picture of Sha, they drew a picture of actually, Xiao, which is that was actually originally pictures of sand or small dots, and then water. We find sand by the river. And so the character for sand has a water on the side, but it actually means just sand. And of course, it can be very dry, like in the river. And mo is also has a sui on the side, and it's in a phonetic, which has nothing to do with anything. It just tells you the character is pronounced more. But actually, Gobi is the Mongolian word for desert.
Desert.
Yeah, desert.
All right. I did not know that. Thank you.
And in the summertime, the Gobi Desert is extremely hot. In the wintertime, it's extremely cold. So it's also an interesting place, the Mongolia. I remember coming in from, I took the plane across the North Pole, and we were flying across the Gobi Desert. We were 5 miles high, and you could look in every direction, and it was completely flat, and not a single plant or any form of life could be seen. It looked like you were 5 miles high. You could see for 100 miles in every direction. It looked like the moon.
I've walked across the Gobi Desert. It's a we did about 110 kilometers in total. It took 3 days. It was like you're on the moon. Like what I would imagine what it was like to be on the moon. And the thing is, again, I'm going back. I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but if you have to go to the bathroom, there's no shelter. You're looking for a sand dune that you can crawl, you know, walk behind. Me and my wife did this as like a bonding exercise or whatever. And it was pretty intense, but because, you know, there's nothing there. It wasn't that bad. And it was beautiful. But you like the dry summers, okay? Now, is that what it's like in Nanjing? Is that why you've been there for so long?
No, I always have to be somewhere. I grew up in Medford, Oregon. We had hot, dry summers, but yeah. Nanjing is warm, dry. I think it's dry summers.
The verdict's still out. You let me know, okay? Are there four seasons? Nanjing got the four seasons?
Oh, yeah. Nanjing's got four seasons, yes.
You could blink at Beijing season, like spring would be gone in a blink of an eye. If you oversleep, you suddenly went from winter to summer. It's very, very strange in that part.
Some people are aware of the seasons and some people...